भगवते वासुदेवाय। ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
फ्रॉम श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 11 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट नंबर 9 चैप्टर एंटाइटल द कर्स अपॉन यदु डायनेस्टी।
यन्निमित्तः सह वै शापः यादृशः द्विजसत्तमा कथम् एकात्मनाम् भेद एतत् सर्वं वेदस्व मे। यन्निमित्तस्य वै शापो यादृशो द्विजसत्तमा कथमेकात्मनां भेद एतत् सर्वं वदस्व मे। यन्निमित्तः स वै शापो यादृशो द्विजसत्तमा कथमेकात्मनां भेद एतत् सर्वं वदस्व मे। यन्निमित्तः स वै शापो यादृशो द्विजसत्तमा कथम् एकात्मनां भेद एतत् सर्वं वदस्व मे। यन्निमित्ता स वै शापो यदृशो द्विजसत्तमा कथम् एकात्मनां भेद एतत् सर्वं वदस्व मे।
लेडी
यन्निमित्ता स वै शापो यदृशो द्विजसत्तमा कथम् एकात्मनां भेद एतात् सर्वं वदस्व मे। द्विजसत्तमा कथम् एकात्मनं वेद एतत् सर्वं वदस्व मे। स वै शापो यादृशो द्विजसत्तमा कथम् एकात्मनं वेद एतत् सर्वं वदस्व मे। यदृशो द्विजसत्तमा आत्मनं भेद एतत् सर्वं वदस्व मे।
यन्निमित्तः अराइजिंग बाय व्हाट कॉज सह That, why, indeed, shapaha, curse, yadrishaha, what kind, dvijasattama, O purest of twice-born brahmanas, katham, how, ekatmanam, of those who share the same soul, Sri Krishna, भेदः the disagreement. Etad, this, sarvam, all, Vedas, vadasva, please tell me, to me. Translation. King Parikshit continued inquiring, what was the motive for this curse? What did it consist of, O purest of the twice born? And how could such a disagreement have arisen among the Yadus, who all shared the same goal of life? Please tell me all these things, purport. Ekatmanam means that the Yadus all shared the same opinion, namely, that Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, was the goal of their life. Therefore, Parikshit Maharaj could not see any obvious reason for such a destructive quarrel among the members of the Yadu dynasty, and he was anxious to know the actual cause.
Om Ajnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Shahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpataru Bhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhya Evacha Patitanam Pavane Bhyo Vaishnave Bhyo Namo Namaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
King Parikshit continued inquiring, what was the motive for this curse? What did it consist of, O purest of the twice born? And how could such a disagreement have arisen among the Yadus, who had all shared the same goal of life? Please tell me all these things. We have very fortunately finished for the last several years up to the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, verse by verse, which consisted of Krishna's 10th canto is, as we know, the face of the Lord. The first, second canto are the feet of the Lord. And since Srimad Bhagavatam is considered by the acharyas as the form of Krishna itself, in a form of the greatest literature in this world. So even Krishna's, is the deity of Srimad Bhagavatam is, the 2 feet are the first and second canto. Then you go upwards. And when you come to the face, you have reached the 10th canto. And the 11th canto is Krishna's forehead. So we are looking at Krishna's forehead now, in one sense, above, a little bit above his face. This is a very striking story, as we can see. We will see more of it in the next few days. It's something very unexpected, something very dramatic, something extremely powerful. What we really call something the earth shaking. We use the earth shaking sometimes. It's an earth shaking event. That means really shook the earth. Like that. So something earth shaking is going to happen now. That the Lord is going to take away from the face of the world millions and millions of the Yadus back to where they belong. So it's a Leela of the end. It's like the tale of the Leela, the end. So we were very happy to hear Krishna's story of Kaliya and, you know, stealing butter and lifting the Govardhan hill. And at Dwarka also the nice Leelas took place with Shrutadeva Bahulaswa and so many nice things took place there. And Kurukshetra, the Samanta Panchak and so many nice things. But it is very extremely instructive. We cannot even believe how powerful this message is that before Krishna is leaving, this is the wind-up. This is like we have the CC, Chaitanya Chaitamrita. Then we say Madhya Leela, Adi Leela and Antya Leela. So obviously we are talking about Krishna's Antya Leela. This is the last phase of His presence in this blessed world. And very soon Krishna is going to leave Swadhama to His natural original abode. So whatever happens in the end of a great soul's departure, of the end of the Lord's departure, even in ordinary family life, whatever the elders say at the time of death is instructive. Beta, aise karna, you know, please do this like this, please do like that. You know, say express, a dying man, a wise man will express, beta, aise nahi karna, beti, aise nahi karna, aise karna. They will instruct. When the great Ramanujacharya left this world, of course he lived for a phenomenal 120 years. Long life is not great by itself. It may not have much of intrinsic value unless there is some quality to it. But somebody like of the caliber of Ramanujacharya, when he stays in the world for 120 years, it means so much output of grace, devotion, preaching, transformative association to the world was available. And several days of his last part were instructive. He just instructed his disciples, especially Dashrathi was there, so many others. You find in the life of Saraswati Thakur also, in the end, apparently he was leaving the world before his expected time, but then we know that from his Leela, that the last part was instructing. So instructions are always there in the end, important things. So what to talk about when the Lord goes from this world? Obviously He wants to leave behind a very strong message before He wants to go. So even though it may be a very drastic, that we would have loved, we would have expected probably something like this. The Shudrasana would end on a nice note. You know, like, okay, Krishna did this, and then a nice note. You know. Something very beautiful, something very nice, something very, you know, in the end you eat a sweet, right? We don't eat a Kerala in the end. When you eat a meal, you don't keep the Kerala to the side. You keep payasam or rasgulla or a barfi in the end. In the end, Prabhupada did that same thing. Prabhupada also was like that. Bengal gentleman. So in the end would be a fixed meal was always a piece of sandesh in the end. Right? You know that. That was this fixed sweet. Prabhupada was a diabetic, but he didn't care. It is his natural Bengali, trait meant that even if it means not a lot, but maybe a small sweet would be there. So you always leave the sweet for the end. So it may appear that this is not very sweet, what is going to happen now. The sweetness is more or less already over in the 10th canto. And yet something extremely powerful will come about now in the 11th canto. How did the Yadus fight among themselves? How can Krishna's own family go into a civil war? How? How can God's personally born children coming from his own self, same body, have a powerful, violent, destructive quarrel and a fight and land up killing each other. I mean, for ordinary man, for a man like myself, I can't even understand how this all this happens. Some glimpse comes through the purports, and even then it is a very, very bewildering story. But all that we can gather probably is that Krishna wants to leave behind a message that the world should never forget. That even if you are my own self-born son, right, there could be some terrible mistakes that can happen. The question being asked here is, I mean, we can see Parikshit also is bewildered. I mean, he just can't take the story. There's a cursing, Yadu dynasty people being cursed. How would, first of all, God's family be cursed? You know, who could curse God's children, Krishna's children? Who could curse them? And if at all it happened, why? So Parikshit Maharaj is obviously going to ask questions. This is not going to be just a questionless, you know, dialogue. It is going to be punctuated by questions. And so he is saying, how this has happened? What was the motive for this curse? Huh? Of course, he's talking very respectfully. We can also learn side by side that he said, the way he's addressing his Gurudev, that you are Dijosattama, the purest of the twice born Brahmins. So at all points of time we find this very cultured behavior of Parikshit Maharaj, very talking, very soft, gentle, non-challenging, deeply inquisitive, humble mood. My dear great spiritual master, you are the best, you are the highest, you are the supreme most of all the Brahmanas. Therefore you know everything. Because you are so pure, your heart has all revelations. Only a pure heart can reveal things as they are. When you want to know things, anything as they are, as it is, as you call it, right? Then that as it is, unraveling of the nature of anything can only come from a pure soul. Otherwise, whatever will be revealed about anything, any phenomena, by anybody who is less than pure, will never be as it is. It will be a distorted revelation of the truth. Because the consciousness is distorted, the information derived is also distorted. The consciousness is crooked, information also given out is going to be of a crooked nature, because it is going to be governed by the nature of your consciousness. When it is a pure consciousness, what will come out from that consciousness will be also always pure. And pure means as it is. Pure gold means as it is gold, 24 carat, as it is, not distorted or contaminated by copper or whatever alloys they may add to make the jewelry. It is pure 24 carat. Therefore, his mood is very, very instructive. That he understands whom he's asking questions to. And he's going to believe whatever they're going to say. He said, oh, how come? Okay. So there is no question of any doubting here in this question. If because you're the purest, whatever you say, I will accept it with an honest heart. His first question is there, what is the motive? What is the motive of this curse, for this curse? So he's asking a very pointed question, a very specific question. When you think about it, how it relates to us, this particular verse. When you compare the people of this world, when you look at the people of this world, very grossly, very broadly, you define them into just two categories. Okay, we say asuras and suras. That's one we are looking at. It's very white and black. Asuras, suras, like that. Nonetheless, a materialist is a person who's interested in the gross body. And a person who is wise, who understands higher values, is interested in what's happening in his subtle body. If we find 99% of the people of the world, because they have my buddhi, they are completely concerned, completely entrenched, entangled, absorbed, fascinated to the extent of bewilderment about only what's happening in the gross body. What are they eating? What are they wearing? What gadgets they are carrying around? What house they are staying? Which club they have joined? You know, what type of partner they carry around with them? What type of watch they are wearing? What type of framed glasses they are wearing? What kind of laptop they are carrying? I mean, whatever it is, just absolutely just external absorption is, by a simple definition, a gross materialistic person. That means his consciousness is so low. We don't talk about what the world feels. We talk about from the point of view of unbiased absorption and unbiased observation. That means his consciousness is absorbed only in the gross body. Right? This is a gross materialist. A man, a person who really has a little bit of depth in his consciousness knows that this is not all in all. There is more to life than what you eat and what you wear and what car you drive. There's something more. And therefore his absorption gradually shifts towards his inner self. He starts thinking about what is the mind? What is the intelligence? What are the movement of the intelligence? What are the nuances of the subtle body? Gradually this is called as, we call it as lower self, we call it as the higher self. The gross body is the lower self. The mind is between the higher and lower self. The intelligence and the ego are the higher self. And the mind really decides which way the consciousness is going to get steered. Whether it's going to get dragged down by the power of gravity towards absorption in the body, or will it be pulled up by the higher forces of the Guru Sadhu Shastra forces, which will raise it upwards. And the mind is going to be the deciding factor. So then for devotees, for philosophers, for transcendentalists, is going to be the subtle bodies, which is going to be far more important. The brahmacharis, for example, they are just happy wearing a simple dress every day. It doesn't occur in the mind, wish I should have a different color. For a materialist, today he's going to wear red tie, and a green tie, big tie. Today this cufflinks and this, red suit, green suit, black suit, gray suit. For a woman it will be this shoes, this lipstick color. just like that. But for a person who's transcendentally absorbed, he just doesn't mind wear the same dress every day. It's absolutely no change. It's apparently drab. Because that is not his concern. He has better things in life to deal with, to think about, than just think about the color of his cloth. That's why he's a transcendentalist. He thinks of transcendental subjects and not gross subjects. Right? He's more thinking about how to train the consciousness. When it's a Krishna consciousness, means it's the art, the science, the powerful mechanisms which help us to govern our own consciousness. So, when you hear this question, what is the motivation? Right? Generally, we always say everything is based on desire, isn't it? Everything is based on desire. Everything is based on desire. Right? A gross materialist, his desire is to enjoy the body. So, it's based on that desire. And that may be true. But if we examine very closely, almost microscopically, there is something beyond desire. What governs desire? How are desires created? Right? So when we are tracing back, we are going backward from the body, and as transcendental and as students of Krishna consciousness that we are going backwards into understanding how to really manipulate, control and govern our own consciousness. If you think about it, all desires are born of some motivation. Ramanujacharya is a pure devotee of the Lord. There is a great person there in that temple of Srirangam who is the high priest. He is also a personal sevaka of the Ranganath deity. So he is not an ordinary fellow. He is a Brahmana of the very high order and is given the honors of being the high priest in the temple of Ranganath, which is such a special deity of the Lord, a self-manifest deity coming from Brahmaloka. Almost at the time of creation, the Lord came down. Right? Such a special soul to be having such piety, karmic balance of credits, whereby he's allowed to come to be the personal servant, personal caretaker of the deity of the Lord. He poisons the Charanamrit when Ramacharya comes to take it. It's a very, very bewildering story when I heard it for the first time. How could somebody so close to the Lord think of killing? We have been told not to kill an ant also, not to kill a mosquito also. So we kill mosquitoes just, it's a reflex. You see some, and immediately the ant goes like that, right? They go, no. We are devotees, we're not supposed to kill. You try to flush them aside and go away from here. Don't bite me, go to the next fellow. So we resist sometimes even that action of snapping a mosquito, right? Because we know there are subtle laws of nature which even that one mosquito killed will have an impact on your karmic passbook. There will be entry made, killed one mosquito. We kill so many ants when we walk on the floor. So we have a huge karmic, we have a lot of debit entries in our karmic passbook. Right? How could a person who's so close to Ranganath have the desire to not kill a mosquito or an ant or a cockroach or a lizard, but to kill somebody who's so empoweredly powerful, an acharya? So what desire he developed? The desire was to kill. So he poisoned that Charanamrita. So let him. He made it so powerful and concentrated that it has to kill him almost instantly. So if you ask this desire, now what must have led to that desire? So we're trying to understand here that we're talking about how desires also have some background. But the desires are not the ultimate state of how to understand the inner self, the higher self. Desires are governed by motivation. Motivation is a very subtle thing, is the handle of the false ego. Like for example, if I have a bell, today morning we were doing aarti, right? If I have a chamara, I'm supposed to do chamara, right? But chamara has no handle. So you're supposed to ring a bell. Ring a bell. But how do you ring the bell? There has to be a handle which gives you the grip to hold the bell. Or you have pakad, want to open up something. There has to be a good handle too. So you use that gadget which has a handle, or you have these pots which make your food. So there's a handle attached to it. There's no handle. The pot is the one, the main thing is the pot. But how do you use the pot? There has to be a proper handle to use that pot, or to use the bell, or to use the chamar, or to use the fan. I have these glasses. The most important thing is these glasses. But they have to have a handle which rests on my ears. So all of us who have glasses, the moment this dandy breaks, The glasses are there, but the glasses become useless because, you know, how do you rest it on your face? So the way, the handle of the false ego is the motivation. So you can control, you can understand what's happening to the false ego by manipulating the handle, which is the motivation. The tendency of the false ego is to always remain in the center. I am in the center. Just like Madhvacharya, powerful man, Bhimsen incarnate, right? So you just lift my toe. Because he challenges this wrestler. You want to wrestle with me? You can wrestle with me. But before wrestling, a small test, a small, you know, unit test or first semester exam for you. You just lift my toe and show me. So he was lifting his toe. He could not move his toe. What a question of wrestling with such a person whose toe cannot be moved, right? It was at the center of that floor. He could not move it. So our false ego cannot be dislodged from the center. It is in the right in the center of our consciousness. That everything we do, say, feel, think, eat, everything we do is with that false ego in the center of everything. Radhana Maharaj explains this very nicely in the last few lectures which he was talking about. That Krishna consciousness means to move the false ego out of the center and bring Krishna in the center of your life. It's as simple as that in one sense. Mechanically speaking, talking through the language of words, it is basically lifting the false ego out of the center and placing Krishna in the center. Very easily said, almost impossible to do. Impossible to do. The false ego has remained in the center of our consciousness since time immemorial. So only way which you can gradually bring it out from the center is to manipulate the handle of the false ego. It is called as the motivation. Here, what is the motivation? The motivation of these young boys was to ridicule the sages. Very terrible motivation. So, motivation, when you think of motivation, that makes us things happen. The India wanted, the Indians 60 years back, 80 years back, 90 years back, motivation was what? Get the country freedom. Most needed freedom from the oppressors, from aggressors, who are destroying our culture, destroying our land, destroying our cows, right? So they were willing to take blows on their head and go to the jail and give up all the degrees and give up all the everything was, they were willing to do anything. The motivation was get the country freedom. Swaraj was the motivation. So that made them go to the jail. So motivations are so powerful that it can make people do great things, right? And inferior motivations can also do people do great things. So motivation is actually what is the way Krishna observes our consciousness. He doesn't observe our consciousness. He observes the covering, the handle which the consciousness. And he sees the motivation. So when the what is the motivation which really pleases the Lord? Now, when we say the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Dadami buddhi yogam tam enamopiyanti te. He says, we know this verse, right? I give intelligence. Now, whether Krishna gives what type of intelligence, how does he give intelligence? When he sees your motivation, he gives intelligence. The motivation actually is to become wealthy, then the desire develops to rob a bank, or to molest a girl, or do murder a person, or do whatever you do, right? So he gives intelligence how to attack at the right time, what type of knife to use, right? So he gives intelligence based on our what perceived motivation Krishna sees. He gives intelligence. So Krishna is only supplying that intelligence based on his observed motivation of the particular soul. So, in that situation, when Krishna sees that somebody like Jatayu, for example, he died. In the eyes of the world, he was a gross failure. Someone said, why did he, old man, why did he try, not old man, old bird, why did he even try to, you know, stop this powerful demon? And sure death. He should have shouted, you know. He should have called for some help from some other sources. Go and attack this fellow. He's stealing a Sita. He just swooped into the fire and he was just cut to pieces practically. His powerful wings, which had allowed him to go to soar to the sun. What was the power of those wings? Now we see an eagle which flies in the sky, you know, but 30, 40 feet above the ground. But wings which are so powerful that which can fly to the sun. That the power of his wings, Jatayu had. But those powerful wings were slashed with a bloody mess created by Ravana. And even those great bird died. Ram saw what? He didn't see the externals. God sees inside. Man sees outside. That is a problem. A great soul looks inside. So Krishna saw, Ram saw, his motivation was to save Mother Sita. And he was awarded as per that motivation. He was not awarded for his action. Here is a man who has, person who has died. But he was awarded at death, ascend into the eternal Ayodhya of the Lord. Motivation was to save. So, for Vaishnavas, for us who are trying to be Vaishnavas, aspiring to be devotees, Krishna will give us intelligence based on our inner motivation. I have a desire to preach. I have a desire to sing. I have a desire to... These are all desires. These are all spiritual desires. You cannot say they are material desires. I have a desire to do deity worship. I have a desire to, you know, make a garland for the Lord. I have a desire to... raise a child in Krishna consciousness. This. We have all desires, different type of desires. Right? But that behind desires, we have to be very sure when we look at ourselves, what is the motivation? That is the very crucial part. Because everything is governed by motivation. Krishna's rewards are based on motivation, not on action. A motivation. If I want to raise, I want to preach. Sridhi Thakur's disciples also wanted to preach. They went to the West. But it wasn't the purest of desires. Some of his sannyas disciples did go to the West. They went to London, they went to Germany also. But the success was not as expected because it was not based on pure, unalloyed motivation. And Prabhupada did the same thing. But he was far more successful because he had absolutely the purest motivation. So they did something there and they came back and they were not very successful. Some inroads were made. Some beginning was made. So the motivation is going to be the key factor. Now which is that motivation which really attracts Krishna to give his own helping hand? When he sees a desire to serve and to please. Now this particular consciousness is so beautiful because even if a devotee does something wrong, something grossly wrong, unimaginably wrong, almost abominable, yet, something destructive, something very, very crazy, something totally unexpected of his stature. If that motivation was to serve the Lord, Krishna will still forgive. That is the power of pure motivation. An example is Indra. Indra has done several times something which is absolutely unexpected for somebody who is trained by Brihaspati personally to be the king, the Lord, the master of the entire Swarga Loka, Devendra. 33 crore demigods he governs. 33 crores. That is like his praja. And this praja handles the entire universe. Right? So practically he's the king of the entire universe in one sense. Because demigods control the universe. Right? So somebody at that caliber of intelligence, sophistication, piety, training, responsibility, what is his level? We cannot imagine the power of Indra's management skills. We have a problem managing a small yatra of 50 people. You take a yatra of 50 people, you know, to a place. And I said, are prasad nahi aaya? 1 o'clock, you know, where is the prasad? You know, delay ho gaya, traffic jam ho gaya, ye ho gaya, ho gaya. Cook nahi aaya subah ko. So many things can happen. Bhog nahi aaya subah ko. You know, we had a yatra. So like, remember at Mayapur, we were there in this long line. Bhagdipur will remember this. We had a long line in the morning. We are standing at Mayapur. Everyone was very eager in the morning to know, what is there for prasad today? The first question you ask somebody in the line, hey, bole aaj jo hui hai, I don't want to say what. You know, acha hui hai, theek hai, govinda mein kha lenge. So the news came that today is Pav Bhaji. Pav Bhaji, you know, it is an irresistible, nobody will go to Govinda's to sacrifice Pav Bhaji. So a huge line started at 5:30 in the morning. And, you know, I didn't get to know this. It was, you know, Pav Bhaji was there. I just did my rounds. I was in Prabhupada Samadhi and this and that. And I came at around 6:30 to 7. We were supposed to leave at 7:15 someplace. The huge line is there. It's not a line at 7. You know, by now the half line should have been over. We're standing there. Hare Krishna, one round, two round. Where, line is not moving today. Means what's happening is some traffic jam there. What happened? So there is no Pav. Bhaji is there, but there is no Pav today. Only Bhaji is there. Bhaji is ready. Gaurang Prabhu made Bhaji in the morning. Everything was done and all that. But where, so where is the Pav? They are making the Pav. No, Pav is coming from other place, you know, some, I don't know where. Calcutta. No, Calcutta has got, like Meera Bhayandar, you know. Next suburb of Meera Road is Bhayandar. Udhar, you know, 15 minutes may have anything can come. Calcutta is 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours, you know, sometimes even 8 hours it takes in traffic jam, all Morcha, Horcha and all these things, you know. Pav has not come. Pav has not come. Someone said, let's take the Bhaji. And Bhaji, how the only Bhaji alone? You know? Pav, you know, Bhaji aisa kaise kha sakta hai? People were willing to wait for any amount of time till the Pav came. Right? So like that. How did we get into the story? What? Management skills. Right? So in a best of IIT brains, sometimes, you know, they're working as a whole team. I'm told there are 83 departments working on any given yatra. That was the last figure I heard. There are 83 departments to have a 4,000, 5,000 people ka yatra managed nicely to any place. There are 83 departments working synergistically, cohesively, you know, as one nice team. But what is the brain work of a person who handles 33 crore demigods who control the entire universe? And yet Indra does something which is absolutely unacceptable so many times. You know, stealing somebody's horse, stealing somebody's wife, trying to kill Krishna, sending Samartaka clouds to destroy Braja, and all sorts of things which he has done. And this is all there in history, embalmed, and, you know, in history, pages of Puranic history, Bhagavad history, it is all there. And we are all reading it practically every day. But that's not wonderful. That's not really wonderful. What is really wonderful, because ultimately we are told that only one person is infallible, and that is Achyuta, that is Krishna. Every other Jivatma, whether it's Indra or Brahma, Brahma also is a Jivatma, exalted, everybody is potentially fallible. So we talk of some, you know, ordinary people of this world like ourselves who are practicing Krishna consciousness, we are endlessly fallible, right? And yet we're supposed to learn how to take shelter of Krishna so that we really actually become infallible as well. But what is most interesting in these pastimes of Indra, every time practically, and that's sometimes we miss the point, we get absorbed in the story, oh, he sent some, you know, apsaras to dance in front of Narnarayan Rishi at Badrikashram. We get into all those stories and its nuances and various, you know, flavors of the story. But what always comes up very powerfully in the end that Indra has always been forgiven. We have now find Indra being chastised and dethroned. You are not fit for this job. Get out from this place. You know, we have a new Indra, We always find Krishna allowing Indra to remain in his same post. Because all said and done, Indra has, his motivation is, he wants to offer loving service. So in one sense, we are all like that. We have somewhere in our corner of our heart, this motivation to serve Krishna. And therefore, if this motivation is kept active in our life, you keep the flame of service active in our life, hopefully even if we do something wrong, which we will many a times, beyond our control, because of the modes of nature, so many things, we stand to be forgiven by the Lord and by the Vaishnavas, because we have the desire to serve. So this motivation has to be nurtured. Jivara Swarup Hoy Krishna Ranitya Das. This is the only motivation which should be behind, which we should be trying to do in any activity, whether it is preaching or deity worship or anything. Because Krishna is going to reward us devotional merits, his grace, exclusively on the motivation and not in the perfection of the action. The perfection of action may be important. We are not saying it's not important. We have to dress the deities properly. We have to speak properly. We have to make a garland properly. We cannot make a garland just in anything. Any sort of flowers. My motivation is to please Krishna. But I put in a wrong, put different type of flowers and any sequence. It is not irresponsible work. Bhakti is all about being responsible. Right? However, along with the responsibility is the motivation. So, here this question of Parikshit Maharaj, I found is very interesting. What was the motivation? So, in every action we perform, to keep Krishna's grace alive in our heart, let us keep this factor of motivation very strong. My dear Lord, I have no other motivation. I may not be very efficient. I may not be very good at doing these things. I may not be a great preacher or a great college preacher or a great grihastha or a great this or great that. You know, that depends on skills. And the skills maybe have to be learned gradually. But even if we do it imperfectly, this will give us umpteen rewards, if he sees his right motivation. So at all times, in all places, in all situations, right, there's vigilance, there's prayer. My dear Lord, my motivation. Therefore, Shuddha Bhakti is defined only on the level of motivation. Shuddha Bhakti, the definition of Shuddha Bhakti is unmotivated and uninterrupted. There we find the nail is hit on the head. What qualifies Shuddha Bhakti is the motivation. When there is no motivation, that means the ego has been removed from the side. And what is that power, which is that hand? And when you say there is a vessel and there is a handle, then there has to be a hand also which holds the handle, right? I'm talking mechanistically. Of course, the consciousness is spiritual, but just to bring it to our level of mechanistic understanding, because we are mechanistic people, right? So what is that hand which can hold the handle of the motivation and move the consciousness, falsely go away from the center and allow Krishna to come in the center? What is that hand? Which hand? What a power of that grip? That hand is the hand of a humble heart. Humility is the only power and creation which God gives to the Jivatma, by which he is helped to move his consciousness from the side and allow Krishna to take control of his life. In the solar system, the sun is in the center. Krishna has to be in the center. The solar system is not the end of the creation. The solar also is revolving. But it's revolving around the Shweta Deepa. Right? Where Narayan, Shweta Vishnu is the center. So the law of nature is, God is in the center. That is the law of nature. There is no living entity ever in the center of anything. Ever. The king is in the center. But the king is a blessed king, is a Rajarshi. That means through that king, Krishna is in the center. Right? Or for a home, the altar, the deity is in the center. Everything is for the deity. In this temple of the Lord, we who are coming to the temple, we are not in the center. The center is Gopinath, Radha Gopinath. You're not mechanically in the center, like under that chandelier, right in the center. That means, center means that everything happening in this temple or any temple of the Lord, Ranganath temple, Badrinath temple, every temple, everything is done for the Lord. That he is the center, actually the center. So, even he has to be in the center of our own consciousness. That is real Krishna consciousness. Only when the false ego moves out, then our activities are really, really spiritual. Otherwise, they are all in the category of mixed. They're still mixed. There's no problem. They can be mixed. But at least we are trying with the power of humility to move the consciousness to the side and allow Krishna to take control of our lives. And when that really happens, then we experience truly our Sat, Chit, Ananda nature. And there is complete Ananda, no matter what happens in the outside world. Even a dying devotee who has lost his health, lost his family, losing his everything. Everything is lost for a dying person, right? But yet because he has allowed to transfix Krishna's in the center of his consciousness, he gains so much of fulfillment in his heart that even though he is losing everything, his body, his money, his family, his prestige, his talents, his skills, his intelligence, everything is just melting away from him. But yet because he's perceiving Krishna in the center of his consciousness, and that gives him such joy that death becomes a rejoiceful experience. Otherwise, for a person who is dying, this is a very horrible experience. But because he installed Krishna in the center of his life, when he dies so happily. And that's the perfection of Krishna consciousness. Bringing Krishna in the center of our lives. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, any comments? Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Gaur Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.